This is Generation Justice, a multiracial project that trains youth to harness the power of community through media, narrative, and critical consciousness. I'm Brad Lewis.
And I'm Ariana Cordova. We want to remind you that this program broadcasts from the rightful lands of the Tiwa people.
Tonight, we bring you an interview with Maritza Perez
and Lauren Mills Bohannon from Afromundo about the upcoming annual Afromundo Festival, which starts next Saturday, April 13th.
We also bring you an interview with Lan Sena, Policy Director at the Center for Civic Policy, who gives us a health policy recap from this year's legislative session, especially the paid family medical leave legislation.
And we have an important vaccine equity update, community events, and amazing music selected for you.
The 2024 Afromundo Festival is from Saturday, April 13th, and it will end on the 20th. This year, they focus on Maroons, Rebels, Dreamers, and Visionaries. Colombia, Costa Rica, Jamaica, and the United States will be featured.
Here to talk about the Afromundo's mission and the festival is Maritza Perez, the founding director of Afromundo, and Lauren Mills Bohannon, a young artist who also plays a part of the Afromundo. Lauren has created the festival image since its beginning.
Here is Barbara Ramirez speaking with Maritza Perez and Lauren Mills Bohannon.
This is Barbara Ramirez with Generation Justice, and I'm speaking with Maritza Perez, a native of the Dominican Republic. Maritza is an independent scholar, cultural activist, and author of Geographies of Home. Maritza Perez is also Afromundo's founder and executive director. And I'm also so excited to be joined by Lauren Mills Bohannon, who is a sophomore at the University of New Mexico. Lauren is deeply passionate about art. She started her artistic journey at the age of 4 and has continuously developed her skills working with both traditional and digital mediums and exploring areas such as pottery, sculpting, and metalworking. She's currently pursuing a Bachelor's of Fine Arts at the University of New Mexico. Maritza and Lauren, welcome back to Generation Justice.
Thank you so much for inviting us to be here again.
Yeah, thank you. It's always awesome to be here.
Thank you. Please share more about yourselves. And let's start with you, Maritza.
I guess what I'd like to share is that right now, what I am invested in more than the writing itself is creating communal spaces for people of color to, especially in a state where we are considered to be in the minority, to create communal and brave and safe spaces for us to be able to dialogue about the past, present, and the future, and everything that concerns us. So that's my role now for a while.
Thank you so much. Lauren, tell us more about you.
You covered like pretty well where I am in like my college journey right now. I think that in terms of like my personal art journey, right now I'm using like my art as a way to kind of explore my culture a little more in a place that seems like very non-judgy. I think that when you live in like a state where there's a very certain idea of like what it means to be like Black and what it means to be Mexican and like that, how that intersection isn't really talked about a lot, at least not in the communities that I grew up in. Art and like mending that gap for myself has really been an important part of my healing process lately. And I agree that with Maritza that like community building and art should be like hand in hand. I'm really engaged with like community activism at the moment. And I think that just art and any type of activism are such like a match made in heaven, which is why I'm so excited about this year's theme of revolutionaries and dreamers, because when I think of artists, that's what I think about.
Thank you so much, both of you. Tell us more about the upcoming third annual Afromundo Festival, which focuses on Maroons, Rebels, Dreamers, and Visionaries.
Yes, we're very excited by that title because it embraces everything that we are. Yes, we're Maroons, we're Rebels, we're Dreamers and Visionaries. And that allowed us to, under that banner, we can explore not just history, but contemporary, and also the aspirations and that and hopes that we're building towards a better future. So yes, we're really excited. And under that banner, we can bring tradition bearers, artists, historians, activists, everybody and anything to show the multiplicity of who we are, that we are not, sometimes it's assumed that Black people or Afro people or Asian or Indigenous or one thing or another, people of color, but that we are everything. And that's why also Afromundo programs are built in such a way that we always have more than one perspective. So it's not one person preaching to the choir or on a box stand, you know, sharing their ideas, that it's not only that we have multiple presenters having dialogues, but then we complicate matters by opening it up to the audience to engage those presenters, because as I said, everything is narrative, and it would be one-sided if presenters came and just shared their views and the audience didn't engage in that conversation. So that, I think, is what makes Afromundo special, that it is about all of us engaging in dialogue, not just being told who we are or what we need to do, but everybody having a say in every matter that we present.
Thank you so much for that. And I want to recognize that you have put so much intentionality into each piece, Maritza and all the Afromundo team, because I know it's collective, into making sure that it is this way, that it's not one-sided. So I think that's admirable. Please remind us, when does the festival start and what are some of the activities that people can expect? You can guide us through the schedule.
Yes, this year it takes place April 13th through the 20th. And the featured regions this year are Colombia, Costa Rica, Jamaica, and the United States. So we always begin and end with a concert. This year it begins with a concert and workshop by multi-instrumentalist Hubby Jenkins, which I have to say, I am so excited that we're featuring him. And we planned this over a year ago, and we're thinking, our audience is going to think we're crazy. Like, why are we featuring a banjo player? But as Afromundo, we wanted to share that banjo is an African instrument, that yes, Afro peoples have been part of Americana and Americana types of music and country music and folk music for centuries. Although we are not the face that is recognized as representing those genres. And thank you, I will give credit to Queen B, to Beyonce, for coming out with a country song, because now everybody will understand exactly why we were having Hubby Jenkins. Had she not come up recently with that song, I think people might have been like, Afromundo, they're crazy. What are they doing? But yeah, we're so excited to feature him. And it ends with a concert by Nidia Gongora, Afro-Colombian Grammy nominee, tradition bearer. What's beautiful is that she is from traditionally Afro regions of Colombia. Everybody thinks of Colombian music as one thing, but to have it be, her presentation is based on centuries of traditions passed on from family to family, and it's beautiful to witness that. And throughout the week, one of the events, Historic Rebel Women, because too often women are excluded from the stories of rebellion. especially Black women. So we wanted to focus on really exciting narratives of Black historical rebel women, along with, in the evening on Sunday, contemporary rebel women who through the, and that's a literary presentation of poetry and narratives to share. We have to be rebellious if we're going to dream of a better tomorrow. And the featured artists are doing that. We also have another program, Black Farmers, Modern Maroons. And the reason it's titled that is because Black farmers were deprived of so much of their land. And there is a movement now to return to the land and claim those farming techniques that we've always carried, but not have the land of late to take care of. And then, so that's local Black farmers. The next day it's conservation visionaries. And that is one program I'm super excited about because Afro and Indigenous communities throughout the Americas have historically been doing the work of conservation, but are not often the face of conservation. And so we're featuring a film of one Afro and one Indigenous community doing that work in Colombia and literally risking their lives. The death threats that they get, the assassinations that have occurred, but nonetheless, they persist. And we're bringing in some amazing activists who have expelled illegal miners from their territories, who have achieved land rights for maroon communities, etc. So yeah, it's just for those conversations to be had between English and Spanish speakers and across borders for us to know the battle is communal. It's not just local, it's across state and national boundaries. And if we work collectively, we can achieve more for our communities and for the global population, because conservation locally is for the well-being of of the entire world. We live on this planet together. Amazing chefs, as we always bring, and to share their culinary feasts with the public. Thursday's event is all by young local activists, because we want to communicate. It's not just elderly people who are wise. Young people are so wise and are taking matters into their hands and fighting for the things that are important for them. Each of the young activists is dealing with different issues. And it's to say to audiences and to young people, pick whatever issue is important to you, but don't stand on the sidelines. You know, if you want to be involved, you can, you have the power. And then Friday's presentation is an amazing play by a local playwright. So yes, the festival includes concerts, films, literature, panel discussions, and so much more. Food.
Thank you so much. It sounds so exciting, and I'm still like just processing everything that you've just mentioned. And to think that these are opportunities where people right here in our community get to learn from people who are traveling internationally to our community to share their art, to share their knowledge. It's amazing. Lauren, I want to ask you about the art that you have created for Afromundo festivals. This year is the third, and I want to learn about it. Please describe it to us and share about the process and the meaning behind this piece.
Yeah, so this year's piece is called Thorns and Blooms. It's a 6 foot tall sculptural piece that is kind of in the shape of a female torso, but I painted it and sculpted her so that she looks like the barrel of a cactus, essentially. And the idea behind this was that a lot of the times women of color, we have to kind of adapt to our harsh environment that we live in. And I kind of drew a comparison between the environment we live in politically and the desert environment that I kind of grew up in, because when I was a kid, I was like, this place is so inhospitable. How is there any life? How is there these things that are flowering and still poking out of the desert sand, like despite these circumstances seeming so like hellish? And that really reminded me of like the fight and the struggles that a lot of women of color, of specifically really people of color, but especially women of color, have to navigate in their everyday lives. And we have this tough skin that has like these metaphorical spikes on us to protect ourselves from this environment that's surrounding us. Yet we're still these beautiful, like natural beings that like are able to bloom and host other life. The sculpture actually has like some nests of birds carved out into the stomach and chest area, because not only are we surviving out in these inhospitable like landscapes, we're also creating safe space and very like nurturing as well. Similar to like the ways that cacti like kind of provide a habitat for desert birds and all sorts of other flora and fauna, that like desert ecosystems are kind of built around cacti in a lot of ways. And I feel like that kind of reflects our current state as well. Like a lot of revolutions, a lot of uprisings are centered around women of color. And I think that doesn't get talked about enough.
Thank you, Lauren. You painted this beautiful picture, and I always see how there's always a little flower, a little plant that always somehow makes it out, concrete, whatever the surface is. Ahí está la florecita, the little flower, the little plant.
So, it's so inspiring. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you for painting that picture for our listeners. Mm-hmm. Where can people find the schedule and more details about the Afromundo Festival and just learn more about everything?
Yes, absolutely. We just updated our website, which takes a lot of time because the festival is so complex, but we just updated it. Go to afromundo.org. Afromundo as in Afro, Mundo, MUNDO.org. And there you will find our mission, who we are, what we do, why we do it. And if you look under festival, you'll see 2024 and examples of previous festivals, but click on 2024 and we've made it easy, although our programs happen at different venues throughout the city to be equitable, to be in proximity to multiple communities. And our website, you can register for all of the events directly.
We're getting close to the end of our conversation, and I want to ask you, what is one takeaway, a piece of knowledge, something that you wish everybody who attends an Afromundo activity takes with them home?
Yeah, sure. I guess just to kind of reiterate something I was saying earlier is that it's not all about suffering. And I think that a lot of the times as BIPOC people, as people of color, a lot of the times we're trapped in this narrative of suffering by a lot of people who aren't from our communities, by a lot of people who don't understand. They just see this spectacle of our past, essentially, and they see it as that. They see it as like a spectacle for their sort of observation and almost like pleasure in a way. I think that the term that I've used my professors say the most is like trauma porn. And something that I love about Afromundo is that it's never been about that. It's never been about exploiting our trauma. It's always been more centered around like the growth we've had. And I think that a lot of discussions about just where we are as a people are always shoehorned into the, oh, well, you've suffered so much category. And I don't think that that line of thinking is always helpful. I think that a better line of thinking is, yes, we've suffered. Aren't we like so strong? Like, aren't we so beautiful and fantastic? Let's steer this into a brighter future now. Like, we don't have to wallow. And I think that the colonialist society that we've like kind of grown up in has left us in a place where they're like, all you get to do is wallow in this. Like, sure, you can share it with us, but only for like our own pleasure and gain. And we're going to like leave your community spaces as long as, like, as soon as it gets too intense for us to like bear and tolerate. And I'm glad that Afromundo isn't afraid to tackle the conversation and take it further than that.
Thank you.
I hope that like kind of made sense.
Of course. Thank you. Maritza.
Yes, absolutely. Right now, there is a pandemic of anxiety, of distrust, of anxiety, of isolation, not just in the United States, but globally, especially in the wake of the actual COVID pandemic. And so what I want people to take away from the Afromundo Festival is that we are community. We are not alone. And collectively, together, we can heal and experience joy and hope and strength, because hope and strength and courage allows us to transform the world into a better place. So I want them to take away community and informed dialogues, that our goal is to paint a fuller picture of who we are and of our shared humanity so that we don't feel isolated.
Yeah. I think Maritza, just like to add on to that, the last bit, because I think it's so important, is that I think that the most powerful thing we can do as like BIPOC people is unite. Like that is the strongest like thing that we can do, is be a unified front. And like the forces that be know that as well. And that's why they're trying to keep us separated, because they know just like if we come together, we're going to be this like monolithic force of just amazing like heritage and art, and we're smart. So let's just organize ourselves, essentially.
I'm going to summarize what Lauren said in the sense that culture has always been so powerful that it is the reason why culture for Afro and Indigenous peoples, and actually throughout the world, wherever colonialism happened, the cultures of local populations and Indigenous peoples were banned because of the power of culture to unite and empower and educate and transform. And so it is not a coincidence that so many BIPOC traditions were banned, but through recovering those traditions and creating new ones, which we always have done also, it empowers and unites and gives us a vision for a better tomorrow.
Yeah, I think culture is our strongest tool, which is why when people come in to colonize us, the first thing they do is like disarm us in a sense. Yeah. And right now we're rearming ourselves, I think.
Thank you so much. It's so amazing to be living in this world at the same time that both of you are in it. I'm in awe of everything that you're doing. Everything, like I said, for this festival has been planned with so much love, with so much intention. And I'm just so happy, grateful to both of you and everybody who has made this festival possible, for creating this that is different, that it's something unique, that it's the only thing like it right now here in our community. And I'm sure in a bigger space, if we look at it too, where is there another Afromundo like this one? So thank you so much for being here. And I really, really appreciate the work that both of you are doing.
Thank you, Barbara. It's always so awesome to talk to you.
And thank you for allowing us this platform. Generation Justice has always been so amazing in representing community, all aspects of our community. And thank you for letting us share about Afromundo on Generation Justice.
Yes, thank you.
For Generation Justice, I'm Barbara Ramirez.
Thank you so much, Maritza and Lauren, for sharing more information about the upcoming Afromundo Festival and what our listeners can expect at this important community event that starts next Saturday.
Maritza chose the song, Sunk Forest by Bomba Estéreo, featuring Nidia Góngora, who will be doing the final concert at the Afromundo Festival. We hope you enjoy it.
In 2011, Lan Senna was diagnosed with stage 4 Hodgkin's lymphoma. She hasn't stopped fighting for policy change since then to help fellow cancer patients and their families.
Tonight, we bring you a discussion with Lan, policy director from the Center for Civic Policy, about health policy in New Mexico, the paid medical family leave legislation, and her message to New Mexicans.
Since we produced this segment, Lan Senna has a community request.
Lan needs a bone marrow donor. She has advocated for years to raise awareness about the importance of donating organs and donating bone marrow.
For more information and to see if you can be a donor, visit bethematch.org. Again, that is bethematch.org.
Here is Barbara Ramirez speaking with policy champion Lan Senna.
This is Barbara Ramirez with Generation Justice, and I'm speaking with Lan Senna, policy director at the Center for Civic Policy. Lan Senna was born and raised in Albuquerque and is the daughter of Vietnamese refugees that settled in Albuquerque in 1975 and 1981. She received her bachelor's degree in political science from the University of New Mexico and her Master of Health Administration from the School of Public Administration at UNM. Lan was diagnosed with stage 4 Hodgkin's lymphoma in 2011. And is currently undergoing treatment for her third relapse. Since her diagnosis, she has advocated for policy changes to help fellow cancer patients and their families. She advocated for pre-existing conditions protections at the New Mexico State Legislature, Medicaid buy-in, paid family medical leave, among others. She is a Founders Council member with United States of Care, a bipartisan group advocating for healthcare policy changes that stop families from questioning bankruptcy or their care. Lan Senna was appointed to Albuquerque City Council in March of 2020, where she championed policies that helped working families like zero fares for transit, language access, and paid sick leave. She served on the council until the end of 2021. Lan, welcome to Generation Justice.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Please tell us more about yourself.
Yeah, well, I got into healthcare policy because, as you mentioned, I was diagnosed in 2011, and it really gave me a pause to think about how I wanted to proceed in life. And switching majors from going into med school and completely doing a 180 and going into policy because I saw that it was truly policy barriers that prohibited me from getting the access to care that I deserved, and really reflecting on my own family's perspective of lack of access to healthcare and how that impacted our communities. And so it's been my lifelong passion since early college years of advocating for our communities and really utilizing my lived experience as part of that and to uplift our stories and how it impacts policy, but also how and ways we can shape policy by uplifting those stories.
Thank you so much for sharing that. It's inspiring to hear about your personal story and all the work that you've done to better our communities. Tell us about your role in the Center for Civic Policy and why this is so important to you.
Yeah, so my role as policy director, essentially, my policy portfolio covers everything under the sun except for the sun. I always joke because we have our own climate and sustainability policy team. But I cover from healthcare to tax to budget to democracy to immigration, everything. And I like to tell folks that as a policy director, what I do is I translate everyday people's lives back to our policymakers and how it impacts our communities. And then I translate what our policymakers draft and create in terms of policy laws and resolutions back to our voters and to our communities. And so I have that true privilege and honor of being able to do so.
Thank you so much for explaining that. I feel like that's essential because sometimes there's a disconnect with communities and legislative processes because they're hard to understand and they're complicated. So it's really essential so that the community can continue to be involved at the policy level. What were some of the bills that you supported in the 2024 30-day legislative session?
There were quite a lot, as you heard, that my policy portfolio expands to everything, essentially. But I really wanted to speak to you all today in thinking about healthcare policy. As I had mentioned, it has a real special, near and dear place in my heart. And something that when I first came onto Generation Justice was talking about the Healthcare Affordability Fund and the ability to imagine something that was more inclusive to all of our communities. And when I first got started in policy work, it's because my grandfather was diagnosed in 92 with kidney cancer and subsequently died when he was 64 in 1994 because of his healthcare accessibility was essentially locked out due to his documentation status. He was a green card holder at that time. And it's something that I thought about years later when I was diagnosed at the age of 21. And I was 4 when he passed away. And so thinking about my own healthcare story and how I was locked out of accessible healthcare, just like my grandfather was years later and, you know, generations later, really made me think about how can we change that. So the Healthcare Affordability Fund had passed about 2 years ago, and now HB 7, Stabilizing the Healthcare Affordability Fund, actually passed this year. And what that does is it's been lowering premiums for our small businesses by 10%, lowering costs on the exchange. We even saw an increase of participation on the exchange. And we also saw zero premium plans for Native Americans under the poverty line to access mental behavioral health. So we're seeing the benefits already, and we're continuing to see those investments. But what I really want to talk about is what didn't pass, and that was paid family medical leave or Senate Bill 3, and how that impacts so many of our communities. And now, you know, regardless of being able to access care, if it's affordable or not, if you don't have the ability to take time off and still question, you know, providing for your families, access to affordable care will still be a barrier.
Thank you so much, Lan. I want to ask you more about the paid family medical leave and why it didn't pass. But before we go there, tell us a little bit more about the history of health policy in the state of New Mexico.
Yeah, so, you know, I think that New Mexico is very uniquely positioned because during the pandemic, we saw about 45% of our population on Medicaid, and now it's more like 42 to 43%. We have a large population also on Medicare and employer-based insurance, but we really don't talk about the people who have been locked out, right? We don't talk about those that, whether it's because of documentation status, because they're making 1 cent over the federal poverty line that caps them out of Medicaid. And we truly saw that more recently with thousands of New Mexicans being phased out of Medicaid because of the unwinding of the public health emergency. So many of our communities already medically vulnerable and being, you know, put in a tough position of whether or not they could afford care. I think through the Healthcare Affordability Fund and how we've been able to reduce costs of premiums on the exchange, we're seeing an increase in exchange, but now we're also taking those investments and looking at what else can we be doing? How can someone just making a cent over the Medicaid poverty cap can actually access this? So that's partly what we've been trying through the New Mexico Together for Healthcare. It's been a coalition of members across the state, rural, on tribal Pueblo communities, rural urban centers, to think about how else can we actually expand healthcare. And so that's been part of our history and thinking through it in a very nuanced way and actually meeting our communities where their needs are. So this past session, really investing and seeing those investments play out has really been like a real goal of mine. And so seeing it actually happen and seeing the benefits already and the investments back into our communities has been truly rewarding.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now I want to talk about paid family medical leave and your analysis on what happened with this legislation this year.
Yeah, you know, this is not our first year in trying paid family medical leave. I think there is misinformation out there that we just started this. This has been an ongoing effort for over 5 years, creating task force subcommittees for years, and also doing statewide listening tours on some of the concerns and what would be best for New Mexicans. And as I said, you know, we can't pass policies without our community's input and really truly making the effort through coalitions of over 40 organizations and over 50 small businesses and working to listen to the needs of our communities. But really, the sponsors of the bill, Representative Linda Serrato, Christine Chandler, Patricia Roybal Caballero, and Senator Mimi Stewart, championing this bill over the years and making the concessions was so important, but also in seeing that and how it died was truly, in my perspective, was that our communities just weren't listened to. The humanity that as part of this policy was not really respected. And we saw that on the day that the bill died. It was voted in its last chamber in the House, 36 to 34, and on Ash Wednesday and on Valentine's Day, and just how, you know, symbolic that was, especially for me. You know, on Ash Wednesday, we talk about how we came from dust and dust we shall return. And we really talk about mortality in that way. And yet those that are facing, you know, illness, chronic illness, death, weren't respected in that same aspect. When we heard folks cheering as the bill died, and really it highlighted the lack of humanity that opposition to this bill really had, and not respecting our New Mexico families.
Wow. I'm still processing everything that you described about the day that it didn't pass. Thank you so much for providing that for us. Lan, will you share some of your testimony that you gave to legislators about this paid family medical leave?
Yeah, you know, this bill has been so close to me because I've been battling cancer for the last 13 years. And now I'm on my fourth battle, and more recently learned that the cancer is spreading. And we stopped chemotherapy. I had been on chemotherapy since 2018, essentially to buy me time. We knew that it wasn't curative. We knew that I would relapse again. So when I found out in 2022 that my cancer had come back and that truly very limited in my options for treatment moving forward, when the bill came forward in 2023 and it died in committee, I actually came up to one of the committee members that tabled the bill to say, like, look, I might not be here for the 2024 session, and this bill means so much to me that it's life or death. And they said, well, Lan, if you're not going to be here in the 2024 session, what does this bill mean to you? And I said, regardless if I'll see the benefits of this, thousands of New Mexicans will benefit from it. And that's what really matters to me. Well, despite all the odds, I made it to the 2024 session. But the cancer had spread and it's continuing to spread. So going up to committee, even after surgery, when I was conscious and they biopsied my lung to remove a tumor to send for clinical trials, being there 2 days later in committee to say that this is what it means to me. It's so important that I'm willing to come out of recovery from a major surgery to talk about why this matters, because if we don't have access to paid family medical leave, we are putting families at risk of dying alone, seeking treatment alone, or not seeking treatment at all because they don't have time to actually take time off of work while not worrying about paying for the medical bills or losing their insurance to actually access care. And I want to stress that paid family medical leave is for issues that are very serious, right? It's for chronic illness. It's like cancer. The bill was to address child bereavement. So if you lost a child under the age of 18, that you could have time to grieve. It was time for families having children, right? It's one of the happiest times also in your life where you're welcoming a new member of their family, whether you're the mother or the father, being able to have that time, but also expanding it a little bit, because for New Mexico, we know that we care for each other. And giving this the opportunity for New Mexicans to take care of one another when we are taking care of our grandparents, for example, as they're aging, or our grandparents are taking care of their grandkids and when they're getting sick. So this was truly to address some of our most serious issues and needs. And for me, as a cancer patient, not knowing if I'll be here for the next session, not knowing if I'll even get to see the benefits of this bill, but I knew that it was so important to share this perspective because they were not listening to our community members, that cancer patients were too busy fighting for their lives as they are, to go up to the roundhouse to share this perspective. And I knew I had that privilege, even though in sharing that I may not live to see next year, how important it is, because it is a situation of life or death.
Lan, thank you so much for being so vulnerable and for making an effort to go, even when you were in recovery, and tell them your testimony. And you've just worked so hard. It's admirable. I want to thank you because you think about others. You're so generous. And I can hear in your voice how you care so much about everybody, that you said, even if you don't benefit directly from this bill, you want for other people to benefit. And that's just so selfless and so beautiful to hear.
Thank you.
What do you wish legislators would have acted on in this past legislative session?
You know, one thing I think about, and how our framing of New Mexico has been in the past, is that we always say, oh, New Mexico is so poor. You know, we have such high poverty rates. We have so many communities in need. But for me, I want to highlight that we saw the most money we have ever seen in a budget session. We have seen records amount of revenue. And so it's clear to me that we're not poor. We're just disinvested. And so we want to see more programs that are investing into our communities to truly address our needs, whether it's criminal justice, whether it's access to healthcare, whether it's public infrastructure, but also, as you heard, for paid family medical leave, as this fund was created to support all of our communities, thinking that through and addressing our most vulnerable communities, right? I'm often asked, you know, as it relates to paid family medical leave, well, what about our small businesses? For me, it's weighing whether we should support some of our chambers and these big corporations that lobbied against this bill, or a mother of a two-year-old who's been battling leukemia, who has to question whether or not she can be there for her child as they're going and receiving care, and her partner having to quit med school because they need to be there as a full-time caregiver. You know, these are the things that are weighing on me, and the things that I think we should be putting at the forefront is that right now we're currently weighing whether or not we should support our most vulnerable, our sick, and our dying over profits. And I think that's the better question, is why.
You mentioned some really important points, and something that really struck me was that we're not poor, we are just disinvested. And I think one of the things that people saw was that in this year's session, we had like a lot more new money than in past sessions. And so the money's there, it's just, where are we allocating it so that New Mexicans can benefit and live a healthy life and with dignity and compassion? We're getting close to the end of our conversation today. I wanna ask you, what is your message to our community?
That our lives are worth it, that we are constantly put in a position where we're having to question our worth, whether it's, you know, what should I sell and put up with to afford my care? Should I sell my house so that I have the ability to afford treatment? Should I continue to go to work or take time off unpaid or quit because I don't have access to paid family medical leave, just to take time to coalesce? And I believe that our lives are worth it, that we should be able to invest in our communities, that if we're seeing records and profit, not just for our state, but for our corporations, that our lives are worth investing in and supporting. And so I think that that would be my overall message. But also, you know, because our lives are worth it, I'm going to continue the fight for as long as I can.
Thank you. Where can people find more information about the Center for Civic Policy?
You're welcome to look online. We have our social media. We also have our own website. We are the convener of the Civic Engagement Table as well. So we are involved with 40 plus organizations that work across the state that work on civic engagement issues. So issue education and just get out the vote. And of course, as we come up to an election year, you heard policies that really impact our communities are really on the line come election.
Thank you. Is there anything else that you'd like to add before we wrap up our conversation?
No, I really think that's it. I really do appreciate Generation Justice and Barbara for you interviewing me and giving me this honor and privilege to highlight, you know, New Mexico family stories and my own story, especially, and how it impacts our communities. Just want to say thank you and very, very humbled to be here.
Thank you so much for saying yes to be interviewed with us and for all the work that you have done for New Mexico. I think that you're so inspiring and I look up to you. I thank you for all the hard work, but at the same time, I think land shouldn't have had to work that hard and still so many of these battles for these bills that are for justice and health equity in our state have not passed. So I'm like, I admire you, you're strong, but at the same time, you should be with your family, like, resting, especially after recovery. So I just have so much gratitude, appreciation for you, admiration. And I just want to say that I thank you for being here with us.
Yeah, thank you. You know, I don't regret a minute of my time, especially when I'm advocating for New Mexico families. So thank you.
For Generation Justice, I'm Barbara Ramirez.
Thank you so much, Len, for sharing about the work you care so deeply about. Your strength and determination are truly admirable, and I also thank you for helping us to understand your story and how it influences your work.
We want to remind you that since we produced this segment, Lan Senna has a community request.
Lan needs a bone marrow donor. She's advocated for years to raise awareness about the importance of donating organs and donating bone marrow.
So for more information to see if you can be a donor, please visit bethematch.org. Again, that is bethematch.org.
Lan chose this next song for you, After the Storm by Kali Uchis, featuring Tyler, the Creator, and Bootsy Collins.
Better than ever, cause your umbrella, umbrella. Sun is beaming on me like headlights beaming on Bambi. Now let's pretend the street is a room and you are a Camry. Cause you're drama candy, the Tito to my Randy. Now let's produce some thrillers, my chocolate with your vanilla on.
It's time for a vaccine equity segment, New Mexico.
That's right. A new study published in the New England Journal of Medicine suggests that being infected with SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID-19, profoundly impacts brain health in many ways.
They explained that large epidemiological analysis showed that people who were infected with the virus were at an increased risk of cognitive deficits, including memory problems, shrinkage of brain volume, and altered brain structure.
It is essential to continue protecting ourselves from COVID and other respiratory diseases, especially now that it's getting warmer and many gatherings are happening.
You're right, Brad. One of the best ways to protect yourself from serious illness and hospitalization is getting vaccinated. You can go to vaccinenm.org and schedule your appointment. Again, the website is vaccinenm.org.
Don't forget to wear your KN95 mask, wash your hands frequently, and test if you have flu-like symptoms.
And that's it for our vaccine equity segment.
We hope you enjoyed this hour of community action. We'd like to thank our guests Maritza Perez, Lauren Mills Bohannon, and Lan Senna.
Tonight's Hour of Radio was produced by Roberto Rael and Barbara Ramirez, with production assistance from Eve Nanez and Elijah Cage. And thank you to our interviewer, Barbara Ramirez.
We want to give a big shout out to all of our youth producers. We can't do it without you. Generation Justice would also like to thank KUNM for bringing voices of young people to you, KUNM listeners.
Our website is generationjustice.org, where you can check out all of our multimedia work and listen to our podcasts, which are also available on SoundCloud, Apple, and Google Podcasts.
We're also active on social media. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and follow our playlist on Spotify.
Generation Justice is funded by the W.K. Kellogg Foundation, with additional funding from the Annie E. Casey Foundation, the New Mexico Department of Health, Infectious Disease Bureau through the Better Together Coalition, the McCune Foundation,
as well as Media Justice, the Santa Fe Community Foundation, and of course, all of you who have contributed to our project by visiting our website and clicking Donate.
Our opening song is Youth of the Nation by POD. I'm Ariana Cordova.
And I'm Brad Lewis. Coming up next on KUNM is Spoken Word. So stay tuned and join us next Sunday at 7 o'clock.
Good night, New Mexico.